Nail Trail 4x4 is brought to you by Best Line Racing. Best Line Racing has a complete lineup of performance additives for your engine's needs. From our oil additives to our fuel treatments, we have you covered for your hobby, tow rig, race car, or your daily driver. Check the show notes for your Snail Trail 4x4 discount at bestlineracing.com.
Welcome one, welcome all to the Snail Trail 4x4 podcast. If you like going off-roading in Toyotas, wrenching on Toyotas, camping in Toyotas, and maybe even poking a little bit of fun in Toyotas, and of course, hearing about how fun it is to sink Toyotas in the snow, then this is the podcast for you. That's right, ladies and germs, my name is Tyler, and joining us here, all of us, not just me, but you and you out there, and maybe Beer Andy as well, is the one and only Mr. Jimmy Jimbo James Jimalaya. Jimalaya, how are you today?
I'm good. I don't know if I've ever been called that one before.
Oh, there you go. New name.
There you go.
Jimalaya.
Jimalaya. Yep. I'm doing well. I'm feeling a bit overwhelmed with life right now. A lot of things going on.
But, yeah.
It's moving forward, I guess. So
nice.
That's good. So,
that's good. Yeah. Same here. Almost have the warehouse set up and ready to do operations out of the warehouse for more flight.
Nice.
So I'm kind of now officially in the transition of getting everything out of my garage and finally over to the warehouse to do all shipping and processing and everything. And I'm going to have to actually like start going to work now, traveling to work,
right?
Which is weird. I haven't done that in like 6 years. So
yeah, I mean, you were traveling up to Studio Snail or something.
That's
for
true.
A while,
yeah.
There, but
yeah, I don't know. It'll be interesting, but yeah, things are going really well. We have this month for the month of March. We're doing a Morflate Stubby giveaway.
Yeah,
for the listeners and the patrons out there. Sorry, the patrons, not all listeners. If you're not a patron, you're just a peasant. So,
ouch. Shots fired.
Oh, man. We're doing a Morflate Stubby for you guys. To get entered on that, you got to be on that $10 tier on Patreon. And that's pretty cool because we're going to be launching that April 1st. Once the warehouse is kind of, I'm hoping will be fully set up and good to go by then. And we can start cranking out production on the Stubbies.
Awesome.
Which is
that's exciting.
Modular kit. So you can kind of buy the manifold by itself and then the hoses a la carte depending on what you need your hose usage for.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then so you're going to have roughly the same sort of hoses, but are you going to do custom hoses for people then? Or are you going to have like, oh, we have a trailer version and we have a motorhome version? And or is somebody going to say, hey, really, this is my wheelbase. Can you make me hoses for this? How's that going to work?
So essentially for now, we're going to start off with the hoses that we already have available, the ones that we already produce essentially, which are the Duo, Duo Plus, Quad, and Quad Plus.
Sure.
But we have the designs made for like a Samurai size or a golf cart size.
Okay.
Or an RV size, like a 45, 50 foot RV.
Yeah.
And we're going to have options for dually axle versus tandem axle.
Interesting.
And then options to, you know, have the hoses be modular to add a trailer hookup on it as well. So you can have a Quad Plus for your tow rig. And then on the end of it, have hookups to also send the hoses down to your trailer. So you can air up and down your tow rig and your trailer all at the same time.
Yeah, that's interesting. I know that my rigs have different pressures for the trailer and the truck, but I mean, I could air, like, I think the trailer goes to 65 and the truck goes to 80.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, if my rig is down below, if everything's down below 65, I can air it all up to 65 and then pull the trailer part off and then continue to air up the truck.
Keep going at up to 80.
Yeah. So that's cool. Yep.
So yeah, that'll be neat. We also have something else big in the book and in the works. I got a contact with America's Tire.
Wow.
So that's okay. All I'm going to say. And I'll leave it there for now.
And you have something in the works with C4 Fab.
And we have something in the works for C4 Fab, which that can be announced now.
Okay.
They announced it on their Instagram.
Oh, yeah. Sweet.
C4 Fab, every year they've started doing giveaway vehicles, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so they take a vehicle and build it and get all these different parts from the industry and do a giveaway on it. And so last year they did a 5th gen 4Runner. This year they're doing a 3rd gen Tacoma and a Tundra.
Yeah.
They're doing two vehicles. We donated some Morphlight quads to each of those, a quad to the Tacoma, a quad plus to the Tundra. And then Snail Armor donated some tail panels, right?
Yep. Definitely. Mm-hmm. We're laser etching the C4 Fab logos onto them.
Nice.
And we're going to do one for, I saved one. Mm-hmm. I don't know how I happened to save one Tundra panel just in case something happened and something did happen. So I have a C4 Fab Tundra version and a C4 Fab Tacoma version going out for them as
That's
well.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool. So yeah, check that out. Check out C4 Fab's Instagram and get... they have all the rules listed there in the links for the giveaway stuff for those two vehicles. So you can go check them out and get entered because that's a pretty damn cool giveaway.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Let's see what else. Oh, while we're on the topic of air hoses.
Okay.
I've saw something interesting, a couple of interesting things going on, through social media and YouTube. And there's a couple of, you know, Morphlate wannabes, I'll call them, sure, companies out there that are using 3/8 inch hose, air hose for their air systems.
Okay.
And they're telling everybody that the 3/8 inch air hose lets more air through so you can inflate and deflate your tires faster than a 1/4 inch hose, which is...
In a way, it's true.
However, you cannot inflate and deflate your vehicle's tires faster with a 3/8 inch hose than a 1/4 inch because
more air will travel through the hose.
Correct. But that the hose is not your bottleneck of the system.
Right.
So the bottleneck of your of a multi-tire inflation deflation system is your valve stems.
Yes.
So no matter what hose you can run a 5-foot diameter hose. It's not going to move air any quicker because the valve stems are what holds up everything.
Now, I don't want to beat a dead horse here, but
okay.
If they said, they could say something like more air travels down the hose to the tires.
I guess they could, yeah. And they wouldn't be wrong, but yeah.
But more air is not going into the tires.
Correct.
You can't air up and air down your tire faster.
Correct.
But more air will be stuck in the hose longer.
Yeah. Yeah.
And heating up probably, uh-huh, right?
Yeah.
So.
Yep. If you create, if there's more air moving down the hose and getting stuck at the valve stems, then that creates back pressure, which makes your compressor run a lot hotter too. So there you have it. That's your informational tip for the day. So
that's wonderful. Thank you for that.
Anytime. I just had to put that out there because I hate when companies deceive people. So
right.
I thought that it was, I was like, I don't know how to put this in a nice way.
Right.
But I just, I like people to be informed and know what's actually going on with physics.
No, absolutely. I mean, you could just be like, Morphlate has done their research and knows the proper amount of air that comes down the line that can go into the valve stems, and the 1/4 inch hose is the optimal size.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyways, so that's all I'm going to say.
All right. Off your soapbox.
Yep. So while I was on my soapbox, we had a guest show up to the studio here, and he has found his way into the studio, found a microphone, set it up himself, has a headset on, and he's here to tell us all about his weekend and here to see if we can convince him to get his truck through the Rubicon this year.
All systems go!
Yeehaw! So, Mr. Truck Norris, how are you today?
What's up, guys? I'm doing real well. I'm happy to be here again.
Yeah. Nice to have you in the studio.
Very spontaneous.
Right? You just happened to stop by to drop some radios off, and we drug you inside and said, come play the microphones with us.
Come play podcast with us.
So that worked out well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm working from home, if anybody's asking.
There you go.
Yeah.
Us too.
We are too, yeah.
Tyler's home.
We answer our phones when we need
to. I hung up on him.
Yeah, that's true. Oh, Mike's calling? Screw that. Yeah.
Sorry, talking into a mic.
Anyways, so yeah, we're here today. This is going to be, I think, an interesting episode, especially now that Mike's over here. So we got, Jimmy and I went snow wheeling this weekend.
Yeah.
And, Mike went wheeling, kind of, sort of. Yeah. He's nodding.
Yeah, a lot of different, aspects of wheeling. Yes. We can talk about it.
Okay.
That's what we do best.
Yep. So, it was a fun, eventful, wheeling weekend last weekend. Yeah. So let's start with, snow wheeling.
Okay.
So first, Mike, have you done too much snow wheeling?
Yeah, actually, when I first got my truck, I did so much that I learned recovery real fast. I think I talked about this in my last story, but
yeah.
There's just a lot of things about the snow that I don't necessarily like because I get stuck a lot.
Okay.
Because, you know, I just like to kind of mess around in the snow, and then half the time it's mostly like recovery versus actual wheeling. So I haven't, you know, I usually try to avoid it if I can. It just depends.
That's the fun part of it, though. Right.
That's the obstacle in snow wheeling. If you could just float on top and scoot along, then it's, you know, it's like driving
might as well do fire roads.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. It got to the point where I was going a lot a couple of years ago, but then I was recovering a lot of people at the same time.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
And then by the time we were done recovering, I was exhausted and I was like, okay, well, maybe it's time to go home now. It's 3 o'clock. The sun's coming down.
Right.
I don't know if I want to keep recovering any more people today.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
That's kind of what it is, though. You just kind of keep, you know, like with snow wheeling. I was talking with people about it this weekend. I was like, with rocks, you usually have a destination you're going to, right?
Right.
With snow wheeling, you don't really have a destination. You're just out there wheeling until either you A, can't proceed any further, or B, you run out of daylight for the day.
Right.
And you're like, okay, let's go home. Or C, you get exhausted from recovering people and you're like, I'm done for the day. Let's get out of here.
Yeah. And we did a lot of little recoveries.
A lot of ours. Yeah.
I think it was 4 weeks ago, Valley Taco, Benny was up here.
Yeah.
And a couple of us went through the backside of Bowman through Washington to try to get to the lake just to see if we could.
Oh,
And there were 5 or 6 Jeeps. I think they were all a bunch of like the rough stuff guys, because that's what they had on their Jeeps. But they were all on 40s and they were kind of plowing for us. But literally, we would just get stuck on like a little tiny ice patch.
Yeah.
And, you know, you just need like a little tug or a little pull. But it got to the point where everybody got stuck on the same patch. And four hours later, we probably made it a mile.
Yep. So that's exactly what we did this last weekend.
Our progression was roughly 1 mile an hour.
If that, like, pretty much we ended up about 3 miles from Highway 50, but like 1.5 to 2 miles of that was patchy, and it was patchy snow and pavement before we aired down. So from the air down spot, we only made it about an hour or a mile,
right?
And it took us about 3 hours to go that 1 mile.
Yeah. We killed more beer than we did mileage that
yeah
day, so. Yes. Yeah. Yeah, I'll just you know, I apologize to the assistant because I don't think I prepped her enough for snow wheeling, because she's like, why aren't we moving? Like, because somebody in front of us is stuck.
Yeah.
Why are they out here if they're getting stuck? You know, like, why aren't we, you know? And so it was funny because I'm jumping a little ahead, but when we were driving home or back down the hill, we were counting how many places we went sledding at.
Oh, okay.
Because we'd move like 20 feet and then it was like, oh, look, a new sledding area, you know, and we'd let the kids go up in the hill and go sledding. And, you know, it was like 3 or 4 spots that we had these like pretty good sledding sections. It was funny, but she was very frustrated that we weren't moving continuously.
Yeah. You know? It's definitely depends on the group you're with. I've had a big, large feeling that this group was not going to be going anywhere fast. Just because I knew a lot of newbies were coming and we just got 2 feet of snow a few days prior.
Yeah.
And it was really cold snow. So it doesn't pack in at all. It's sugary and you just kind of sink into it and it doesn't pack in. As you try and pack in, it just kind of moves out of the way and then fills back in and moves out of the way and fills back in.
Right.
So I was like, it's going to be an interesting day. when we were meeting everybody, we had 15 rigs. 8 of them were non-members of the club. 7 of them were members.
Really?
Wow. Yeah. And then 5 or 6 of them had never really been snow wheeling before, in the terms of like deep snow wheeling. Like they've driven through snow on a road before, but they've never really been snow wheeling before. So I was like, it's going to be an interesting day.
So this sounds like it was 20 plus people.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
People-wise. Yeah.
Right, people-wise. Right, yeah. Right. Yeah. But it was an interesting day. And we made decent progress up until one spot. And then it took us 2 hours to get everybody through this one spot.
Mm-hmm.
So that was really interesting because everybody was, it was funny because I just kind of rolled through it. I was the first in line kind of plowing. Yeah. And I had a little bit of a trouble. I started sinking. And so I just kind of backed out and got a slightly different line and went through just fine. And then everybody else behind me got stuck.
Pretty much, yeah.
So we had to start pulling everybody, and by the time you got there, Jimmy, because you were kind of in the back of the line.
Yeah, I was one in front of the anchor.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Why were we doing that, by the way?
Why was I back there?
Uh-huh.
Because I was running APRS,
mm-hmm.
and you had your tablet up in the front, and you were monitoring APRS, so then we could actually, without using the radios, we could visually see where the caboose and the head of the train would be.
Mm-hmm.
And so you could look on the out onto the, you know, the map and see where I was at pretty much all times.
Yep. So that was really cool to be able to see that the caboose, the end of the train, was still moving without having to talk to you about it. Was pretty neat. So anyways, by the time you got to this spot, it was like a highway, but kind it was of. Still really loose. I mean,
yeah, but the
13 rigs had gone through it already.
And the rig in front of me got stuck.
Yeah.
You know, and dug a hole.
Yep.
You know, and the rig in front of it. Everybody, I think, I don't know if, did anybody between you and me make it through?
One person did, but that's the spot where his transmission stopped working.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
So, yeah.
How does the transmission just stop working?
It's a JL.
So explained.
Okay. It's a Jeep thing. You wouldn't understand.
Yeah. There's a clutch or a fork linkage issue on some of those, right?
I don't know. His issue was an electronic issue, and we think what happened was he got into that really soft spot where everybody was getting stuck, and the rig just wouldn't go forward anymore. And his the power control module, which is one of the CAN buses that all the ECMs go into, freaked out.
Sure.
Because his ABS was going, all of his, everything was going off, right?
Sure.
And so it freaked out and essentially locked up his car.
Oh, yeah.
His drivetrain.
He needs to learn how to turn that off.
So, yeah.
What was the remedy to get it going again? Was it an electronic thing? You got to reset something?
He shut off the vehicle, turned it back on, and then he was throwing an engine code, but everything worked again. And so he just kind of backed up and made his way through the hole. I had my OBD2 reader, because I keep it in Kermit all the time now. So I ran it over to him and we pulled up the engine code, and it was the electronic control module, whatever it was, 0607 was the code. And so I cleared the code and it didn't come back the rest of the day. So
nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, the few people in front of me got through one of the hard sections and needed to be yanked forward. And then I watched the person in front of me where they got stuck. So I was like, okay, I'll just give it a little bit more goose when I get to that section, and went over it. And then Brian behind me was like, just crawled. He's on 40s and I don't know how wide his tires are.
I think they're 1450s.
Yeah. And he was at like 0 PSI,
yeah.
You know, and had this footprint of like, it's bigger than my rear end. And,
That's pretty big, by the way.
Yeah, thank you. A bobcat, I have to know.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
And he like crawled through the whole thing, and then he reversed back through the whole thing, and then drove forward through it again, just kind of compacting it for when we needed to go back through it, you know, on our way out. So
yeah,
and I think on the way out, everybody walked through fine.
Nobody had any issues on the way out. Yeah. Yeah, it was funny just going through there and pulling everybody through. But when you went through, just hearing Bobcat go after everybody else.
Yeah.
Because Bobcat just goes, wee!
Yeah.
Nee, 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 nee. Right through.
And I was in low.
Yeah.
I was in the 2.28.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, everybody's like, that thing sounds like a side-by-side.
It was like,
well,
good.
It is a four-cylinder. And
wait, where did you guys snow wheel at?
Up at Wrights Lake Road.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I don't think I've ever been there yet.
It's fun. It's a great little spot because it's not trafficked at all. Because everybody goes to Mormon Immigrant Trail up here, right? And it was funny, throughout the day I was hearing some guys on the radio that I didn't know where they were. They were coming in decently clear. And so finally at the end of the day, on our way out, I asked him, I was like, hey, you guys on this frequency, I'm just curious where you guys are at because I've been listening to you all day. They're like, oh, we're over on Mormon Immigrant Trail. And I was like, damn, okay. I'm over here. I'm up by near Wright's Lake.
What frequency were you hearing them on?
One of the Simplex channels.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Not so, the one we are that the group was on.
No. Okay. It was a different, technically the Esprit de Fours Simplex channel, I think, the one that they use.
Oh, got it.
So yeah, with them being over on Mormon Immigrant, I was just like, hey, what's it like over there? What are the conditions like? And they're like, hey, it's great. We're up at the top. But there is a shit ton of cars everywhere. And I was like, yeah, that's why we're not over there. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, Wright's Lake was great. And it's not very trafficked and it's got a ton of fresh snow there. And, we only made it 3 miles. So there's only fresh tracks to 3 miles in. And if you want to go up the rest of the other 5 miles, then yeah. There's 5 miles of fresh snow up there right now.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. We got to the point where the sign was and I was kind of like, people were getting stuck. I think you got stuck and you're in the lead at that point. And then the person, Sarah and Ryan, right behind you, I think got stuck and they were like, hey, we need help. And you know, you're like, hold on. And then I think you dug yourself down. You got yourself stuck
there. Yeah. So Ryan and Sarah were right behind me and they got stuck. And
they
then
were in a XJ.
An XJ.
That's pretty decently built.
It is. They just don't really have lockers. They have kind of like posies essentially in there.
I've ran the Rubicon with them in that rig.
Rubicon's different because you get traction on the Rubicon.
Well, I'm just saying that rig is qualified to run on the Rubicon.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and so it's. I'm just stating that it's a decently built rig.
Yes.
It's not a pizza cutter.
Okay, yeah. I don't think qualifications are very high to run the Rubicon personally, but that's me.
He just did there about your truck, huh?
I think his truck can make it just fine. So I don't think he would have any issues.
I've had a lot of practice in the beginning and this summer on replacing CV axles. So
nice.
I think I might be ready for it. If I just bring two CV axles, two tie rods, and you guys drag me through some sections and I take off a lot of my weight, I think I can make it.
We'll take one of your spare tie rods and your spare tie rod sets and weld a bunch of angle iron on it on either side. And that way you're good to go.
Well, no, the good thing is now I got rid of my bead looks and now I have real bead locks on the truck. So
that just mainly helps you for snow though.
Right. But I get to say I did it with bead locks.
That's true. Okay.
And it might help a little bit. Well, who knows?
Yeah. You're on 35s?
Yes, sir.
Nice.
Yeah. That's
fine.
So, when Ryan and Sarah got stuck, Josh was right behind him and he tried to pull him out and he kind of got stuck.
Oh.
As he was like yanking. So they had a dynamic rope between him stretched with both of them stuck in the snow.
Yeah. That's great.
So it was funny just kind of watching that happen. And they were like, Tyler, we're going to need you to come up from the front and pull us forward. I was like, okay. So I tried backing up the hill I just came down. And it just wouldn't let me. I hit a couple of soft spots that shot me off to either side into the snowbanks rather than letting me back up my tracks. And I ended up burying the 4Runner and I couldn't open the driver door.
Yeah. It was so deep in this 4Runner that the snow berm was at his door.
So when we went up to the backside of Bowman, it was kind of like the snow was almost angled like towards where it was coming down in the mountain and the left tire tracks were kind of iced out. So, but then on that was also like the little ice retaining wall that was kind of there by all the other trucks. So people were just getting stuck on these little ice patches. And it might've been a couple of years ago when I figured out that I actually get more traction on the short crunchy stuff than the flat tire tracks.
Yep.
So after a couple people got stuck, I was like, hey, like you got to go high on the crunchy stuff. They're like, oh, am I going to get stuck? Like, no, you're actually going to get more traction on that than you do on the stuff that's already padded down and iced down.
Yep.
Revelations. I like this new soundboard thing.
That's right. Fun. You haven't seen it since the last time. That's fun. We can Bluetooth people in super easy too. So like if people leave us stupid voicemails, we can Bluetooth the voicemail in. Like Jason from Wheeling Wine and Whiskey has done that a couple times.
Now people are just going to leave you voicemails for fun.
Probably. If they have our numbers,
we'll get one from Norris like in an hour.
Yeah, right.
Most likely, I already have it planned out in my head.
Nice. So, what I want to know from this trip is Jimmy, this was, in my opinion, this is like the first time you've been deep snow wheeling in Bobcat. So what are your thoughts?
I had fun and I knew what I was getting myself into. And part of my, the hard part I had was more keeping the assistant at bay.
And, the mini assistant.
Yeah. You know, we prefaced the whole trip as, hey, we're going to go try to wheel out to this lake and then we're going to go have lunch and possibly go sledding, you know, and we took us so long to even just start moving that, you know, the mini assistant was just getting frustrated in the back seat. Like, I want to get out. Why aren't we moving? What's going on? And the assistant was like, this is ridiculous. Why is everybody having such a hard time? What's going on up there? Why are we just sitting here and waiting? You know, it's like, can't people move along? You know, and I don't think I, you know, I said, well, hey, let's go snow wheeling. Let's go have some fun. Let's go up to the snow. Let's go relax. You know, and then I didn't preface the part of the wheeling. So minus that whole thing that was happening inside the rig, I had a great time. I thought it was fun. When you were getting stuck up in the front, after we hard passed that like tough section, when you were dealing with Sarah and Ryan and the person behind Josh. I was at like where the signs were, for like, there's another road that kind of goes up and, you know, it said, the sign said we were 3 miles from Highway 50, 5 more miles from Wright's Lake. And I was like, you know, it's getting kind of late. You know, the kiddo hasn't eaten. Let's have lunch. Let's figure out, let them figure out what's going on up ahead. This might be a good turnaround spot. Let me try to back up and, you know, back up into the road, up the road the other way, and see if I can start creating a turnaround spot. And as soon as I got off the tracks, Bobcat sank, sunk the 37s all the way up to like the top of the snow. And I was like, put it in low, low, tried to like crawl it forward and back a little bit and rock it. And I was either high centered or wasn't moving. It was, and I was like, okay, I need a pole. And, Carlos in front of me yanked me out. There was, and there was no room to move. So he like pretty much just did a 90 degree pull sideways, you know, but it, the snow is so soft and I cranked the wheels that it just pulled me right out. It wasn't a problem. So then I was like, okay, well, let me start munching down the track a little bit, you know, after a while. And so I was like going one tire at a time, like just back and forth, back and forth. I spent probably like 25, 30 minutes just inching back and forth, trying to compact this area. And it worked. It, you know, a lot of people turned around and used that spot when we did turn around. But going back to the wheeling side, I had a great time. I thought it was fun. It would have been more fun to try to break some more trail. I was at the back and kind of just cruising in everybody's tracks. I do think that trying the idea of trying to move forward and trying to go through the snow and the obstacles like of the snow, trying to defeat, you know, the snow and trying to get to point X, you know, is a good challenge if it's, as long as you know what you're kind of getting yourself into. I do have a lot to still learn about. Okay, I'm stuck.
Different strategies for
how do I get myself out? What do I need to do? And Bobcat, I would air the rear down to 5 and the front down to 6.5, and I'm not on beadlocks. Everybody's like, you're going that low without beadlocks? I'm like, I'm not, my steering tires are higher pressure than the other ones, so I should be good.
That, and you're really lightweight too.
I am. So. That's true.
Well, at least in that situation, you like buried your 37s, because I don't know how many times I've got stuck and I've jumped outside and I'm like, how am I stuck? I'm like in 6 inches of snow, but I have no traction. And that's like, maybe that's just a big IFS problem. It probably is, but at least you got stuck. My truck gets stuck on anything.
Yeah.
Okay. I see it. Yeah. See, that's really stuck.
I was almost up to the frame rails. And, you know, it's like, oh, okay. Well, and it was just, it was funny because everything was working good. And then once the front fell off the tracks, it, the whole rig went down. But the rear, I think, is because it's so light. It was fine. And then once I tried to move, it just started digging itself down. So I think I still have a lot to learn about how to feel the snow, feel what's happening, understand, like I knew when I was stuck and I just stopped. I was like, I'm stuck.
I'm not going anywhere.
I tried a little bit, you know, like, let me see if I can do this, you know, and I'm like, nope. Okay. Before I dig myself down further and get myself into a harder situation, you know, somebody get me out of here, because I could make this worse, or we could just solve the problem by, you know, and I'll defeat my ego at the same time. But, you know, yeah. And so, and I learned that lesson with mud, you know, many, many moons ago when I would go play. You know, it's like, as soon as you start getting stuck in mud, you just got to stop, and there's, you're not going to get out.
No,
there's no, you know, like, you're like, I think I can make it. No, you're just going down more.
Yes.
And you're making it harder for yourself to get out.
Yep.
So I knew that situation. And so I just was like, nah, help me out. And I did get stuck another time when I was stamping down the turnaround spot, but I was like, I went back too far and went down a hill, and I couldn't get turn around and get up the hill that I was, you know, from stamping down. And it was funny because then Brian pulled me out that time, and he was like, man, you were stuck. And the driver's side rear tire that was digging it down was like, there was a huge hole where that was, you know, and it was just like, I had to dig out. I was like, let me see if I can get myself out and figure this out. You know, I pulled the shovel out and was shoveling snow out of the axles and away from underneath the tire. So I could kind of have a launch pad.
Yep.
And I did move, but I didn't have the momentum to carry me up and over the hill that I created.
Gotcha.
So,
yeah, but usually in snow, if you can create a little bit of space, if you can create an inch of lateral movement, you can get yourself out.
Right. Yeah.
And it just depends on how long you want to work at it.
Yeah. Another thing we've talked about in the past is that you need to be clearing snow from the tread of your tires.
Right.
And I wasn't.
Oh, so you need to go down further.
I guess.
Lower.
I'm not sure how much I want to go down.
Exactly.
With those non-beadlocks, you know. But yeah, it wasn't because I was trying to like kick snow out of the tread so I can get me some traction, you know, because I was just running on slicks at that point.
Yeah.
Right.
While I was on the trail, everything was fine. But when I got into the deep snow, it wasn't working.
I mean, that was interesting snow because, I mean, even in the with my IROX, which in my opinion are like the best snow tire out there.
Opinion, those are the best tires ever invented.
For off-roading in general, yeah. Not on road.
Sure.
I think they're one of the worst tires on road, but that's not why I run them. So in for snow wheeling, though, I don't think you can beat them. They have the lugs are so spread out. It's a really soft compound. So as you air down, and it just balloons out wider. Yeah, it does have really stiff corners on the sidewalls to keep your tire square. And that's one of the issues that I don't like about Toyos and Nittos. They're a great tire, but they're extremely square. They do not pooch out at all when you air them down.
Yeah. The tire situation on Bobcat is good for rocks, but not good for the snow.
Yeah, Toyos and Nittos, awesome for rocks. They are two of the most durable tires you will ever see on it for off-roading. Beautiful tires for rocks, but not terrible, but not good for snow, in my opinion.
Yeah, they're also, mine are load range E.
Oh, yeah. On Bobcat. On Bobcat, who weighs 2,500 pounds. Which is like,
I was down at 5 PSI, and that's when they started to pooch out.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm like,
cool. Yeah, I have Toyos, and they're in snow, I'm not helping me out.
No.
Yeah.
But I had a good time. Having fun. You know, it was nice to be out there. I knew when it was like, okay, we're stopped. Let's see. Let's get an idea of how long we're going to be stopped. Okay. I'll grab a beer, you know, or, you know, let's let the mini assistant run up the hill and get soaking wet. And, you know, and that was another thing we messed up on. We knew that we were going to the snow. We knew that there was, you know, that we were going to be hiking out to the lake possibly. We didn't anticipate stopping so many times and letting the kiddo play in the snow, and about halfway up the mile that we went or whatever. You know, the kiddo was like, I'm wet. Can I change my clothes? And we brought spare clothes, but we're like, no, you can't change yet.
Cause we're not on the way home yet. You
know, we'll change when we're turning around and getting out of here.
Yeah.
Because we're going to put dry clothes on you, and then you're going to go play in the snow some more, and then, you know, you're going to get all wet again anymore, and then you won't have dry clothes on the way home.
Yeah.
And we didn't really anticipate the amount of playing that she was going to be doing, so we didn't bring the like optimal snow gear for her.
Gotcha.
You know, we brought like big wool socks and rain boots that went up to her knees, and jeans, and like just normal like sweaters and stuff on the top, because we figured, oh, we'll get to the lake, we'll walk to the lake, and we'll play for a little bit, and then we'll, you know, put you in the dry clothes, put you back in the rig and drive home.
Gotcha.
You know, so we didn't properly prepare for that situation.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
I know for me, going back to the sitting around, because that happens a lot in snow, especially if you're in a big group. If you're in a group of like more than five vehicles going snowmobiling,
yeah,
the people at the back of the line are going to do a lot of sitting and waiting. When I'm in those situations, I usually start just going up onto the snow berms and just, I put it in crawl and see how far along past everybody I can get.
Yeah.
Until the line starts moving again. Then I stop and wait there and,
until your spot.
Until my spot comes back up to me in the line.
There was a few times when I thought, like, I'll just crawl up to that person and see like what's going on. Mm-hmm. We did also have a guy overheating on the trip.
That's
down
true.
By us.
Yep.
And we found out that one of his electric fans wasn't turning on, and we zip tied, like it was intermittent, like when he was playing with it. And so we zip tied it closer together, you know, and cinched it together, and it started working much better. And then propped his hood open so it not latch shut, so more airflow could go inside. And that seemed to solve the problem. We just let it sit there for a while, and it got down to 180, and then everything. I was like, and he was trying to make it up this hill, and I was like, put it in low, you know, give it a little, you know, keep your wheel speed up a little bit.
And, yeah,
and then he was
open too.
Was he?
Yeah, I don't think he had a locker at all.
I'm not sure. I don't know. There were two rigs with us that are open, and that was. There was struggles there.
Yeah.
Sometimes the back of the line's fun because you kind of get to have more beer. And you're so far back there that if somebody's stuck in the front, you don't really have to help them because you're like, well, I can't get up there. So
I'm just going
to
right? Yeah.
So you go up and watch and then you come back.
Yeah, that's definitely. And then, and then you get an understanding of what to do in the situations and then you can attack
that.
It.
Yeah, yeah. Avoid that part. Yeah.
Okay, don't put my tire over that rock or whatever. But yeah, I'm not complaining with the position I was in. It was just, there was a little bit more downtime than I had anticipated.
Yeah.
And I think if it wasn't 15 rigs, that would have completely been different.
It would have been a lot different. Yeah.
And if some of the rigs that went with us, you know, were a little bit more equipped, or if it was a more, you know, more stringent on the rules for that group, which this trip wasn't. This was more of a newbie adventure. You know, there was many factors in there that could have changed any situation of this story, obviously. But I had a good time. It was just nice to. I haven't gone out in so long because I've just been working for you know, doing so much other things that it was nice to put Bobcat's tires onto some dirt and pavement. Where besides sitting behind the fence, you know, corralled in.
So let's talk a little bit about, because it's one thing to be stuck behind your group. It's another thing to be stuck behind another group.
Yeah.
So let's talk a little bit about this real quick.
Okay.
Because you ended up stuck behind another group.
Yeah.
During this trip.
We did.
And this group was hilarious because we were all airing down, right? The beginning of the day, we got to the spot where we're airing down, 15 rigs airing down. And we're just about to get everybody in the rigs and take off.
We were almost done. Yeah.
And three vehicles show up. One truck, I forget.
It was an F-150.
An F-150. And then two Forerunners.
Two 5th Gen Forerunners.
And I stopped them because they're just kind of slowly working their way up the snow patches past our group of 15 rigs as people are like getting in their cars. So I stopped them real quick and I was like, hey, how's it going, guys? They're like, good. I was like, you guys up here just for a little day trip messing around? They're like, yeah. I was like, okay, cool. Are you guys going to be airing down here? Because I think from here on out, it's just all snow. Or are you going to be airing up further on? And the guy looked at me like he had no clue what I was asking him. Like I was speaking another language, but like he was trying to process what I was saying. He was like, he goes, no, we're just up here for the day. We're not going to we're not deflating our tires. And I was like, okay, do you mind waiting here? Let us get on ahead. We're literally about to take off. I was like, I really don't want to be stuck behind you guys.
You piqued my interest at F-150.
Yeah. It doesn't take a lot.
Yeah. So, these guys, they were like, oh yeah, no, if you guys are taking off now, then yeah, we'll wait. And I was like, okay, cool. Thanks. And so we all got in our rigs, started taking off.
Every one of our rigs was built to some extent. And these guys were bone stock.
All three rigs are bone stock.
If I was in that situation in that guy's driver's seat, it would have been like, okay, these guys have a little bit more understanding, or at least go out and play a little bit more than I do in my bone stock rig. Yeah. And they
probably had no winches either. Nothing.
Nothing. There was nothing there.
Yeah.
They did have some maxi pads though.
Yeah, they did.
But we'll get to that.
Overlanders.
So we start taking off. The whole group takes off. And this group of three bone stock vehicles jumps into the middle of our group. And about 100 feet, 200 feet.
As soon as they hit snow.
As soon as they hit the snow, dead stopped. And
that was it was a slight hill there too, but it wasn't like all of us crawled right past them.
Yeah.
Right. You know, and so it was a factor of, they didn't air down at all.
I mean, and they were on street tires too. Like they didn't have, you know, even all terrains, I don't think.
No, I doubt it.
But yeah, it was just funny that the look he gave me when I asked him if he was going to be airing down now or later. What was interesting, so I wanted to hear, because I never heard how that ended up. Did you guys end up getting them unstuck? Did they get themselves unstuck?
They got
themselves, you just drive around them and leave them?
Yes, to all the above.
Okay.
they ended up getting themselves unstuck. They used the maxi pads and reversed and went down the hill a little bit and then pretty much gunned it. And it was the F-150 made it up.
Mm-hmm.
The second fifth gen 4Runner was the one that was having problems and it eventually made it up. And then the second fifth gen 4Runner just gassed it and went through the section that looked hard for the second one.
Mm-hmm.
And then they kind of got to this big turn and they realized, oh, there's like eight more rigs behind us and we're slowing everybody down. And they kind of just pulled themselves off around the corner. And then we all went, everybody started passing them. And then this is where somebody slid off and into the ditch, like up ahead
of
us.
People?
Yeah, one of our people.
Okay.
And so we just barely passed them and then we stopped.
Oh.
Right? And we're like, well, okay. But when I went past, I was like, if you guys are going to progress further, you guys should really air down your tires.
Uh-huh.
You know, I would go down to like 15.
Yeah.
You know,
at least.
Yeah. And
what's airing down?
Yeah. You know, and it'll give you more traction on the snow and you'll be able to, it'll make it a little bit easier.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and they're like, I think this is about as far as we're going to go. And I think the kids hopped out and I think they're pulling sleds out. And I think they just like, they got to a point at which they felt comfortable that they could turn around and get home.
Okay.
And, you know, and I think that was their end goal, I think.
Okay.
So, and then, yeah, they weren't there when we came back. So they must have turned around at some point because they could have followed our tracks and had smooth sailing for a while until the difficult spot that we had.
Yeah.
You know, but I don't think they continued on. I think that's where they parked it. They probably packed themselves into like a small little hole and had a hell of a time getting out.
Yeah.
You know, then realize, oh, we're over our head.
I heard that the maxi pads were brand new.
Probably.
Never been used. Yeah. Supposedly somebody said that they were pulling them out of the box.
Oh, wow.
To use on the trail. To use to get out. And I was like, that's awesome.
Yeah, I didn't see that. I was a few rigs back. So I did see them pulling throwing them down into the snow, but yeah, I didn't see them opening the box, but yeah. That's so weird. It was funny because shortly after that, there was like sort of a big S turn. You know, so we were going doing a left hand turn where we passed them, and then there was a little straightaway, and then we were doing a right hand turn at around the top of this hill, and somebody slid down into the ditch, and it was the person that was open in the Jeep.
Gotcha. Okay.
And so they got themselves out by reversing back, but it held the line up again, you know, and we were right by these people that we just passed, and, you know, up the hills a little ways, but it was funny. I was like, well, we just passed them, and now we're stopped.
Yeah.
But they would have had the same problems up ahead. So.
Yeah.
But it ended up fine as soon as, I think as soon as they realized that they were blocking the road, that they let us by.
Cool.
They let us by at a situation that worked out for them, right? That where they could pull off safely and
that's good because I wasn't sure. We were sitting there for a while and I didn't realize that our open rig had slid down into the ditch on the turn.
Yeah.
We were just kind of sitting there waiting for an update on what was going on because I thought that whole time we were waiting for the 4Runners to get unstuck and for you guys to get past them or what was going on with that. And so I was like, I'm about ready to just go drive down there myself and make tracks around them for everybody to get past if you guys couldn't do it. But apparently there was a different story happening.
Right. Yeah, this was at before the overheating problem, I believe, too.
Okay.
So there was a point at which I was like, I could probably drive around these guys, you know, and I could get by and make a track up the hill.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, we passed them and then that Jeep went into the ditch and then and then they got out, but there was a point at which the whole line was stopped, but Nobody was stuck. Communication happening in the line that said, we're good, we can move forward. There was nobody from the front radioing back, like, please let us know what was happening. And there's nobody in the rear, you know, going like, we had no, in the, where I was.
We spent another 20 minutes sitting there.
Yeah.
Because the back of the line and the front of the line were not communicating about what was going on.
We had no visual of the stuck rig.
Yeah.
So the rig was up in front of us, you know, but the vehicles that got stuck and were unstuck never said that they were good to go.
Yeah.
Yeah. And maybe we should have walked up or maybe you should have walked down. Yeah. I mean, there was, you know, once again, there was a lot of situations that could have solved that problem, but there was a point at which we were just sitting there going like, what's happening? And then I think somebody got on the radio and said like, hey, what's going on? Can we move? Yeah. You know, and everybody's like, yeah, we're good. And we're like, okay, let's go. Okay, like, I don't know why we're all sitting here.
After the trip, I want you to talk a little bit about a couple of things with Bobcat that have shown themselves here.
Yeah, well, I think I wanted to say that it took us 3 hours to get a mile and a half or, you know, ish in, and it took us like 10 to 15 minutes to get back out.
Yeah.
The trail was all tramped down.
Yeah.
I do know that, so I think you're alluding to the body mount of the rear of Bobcat's bed has separated from the bed.
Correct. The bed on Bobcat dances around independently of the body, rest of the vehicle. Like
the body, the frame section is great. The place that where the frame and the body mount attach is fine. It's the bracket that wraps around the bed and attaches the bracket to the bed is broken off.
Yeah.
And so it's all like, you can literally like move it a few, lift it up and move it a few inches in the back. It's all. So yeah, before Cruise Moab, I'm probably going to pull the bed off, flip it over and tack weld it back on or something, which is going to be a bummer because I just put a bunch of stickers on the inside of the bed. So I'm probably going to burn those off.
Oh well.
Whatever.
So what else happened on the way home?
Oh, the brake caliper froze again.
Yeah.
Is that what you're alluding to? Yeah. That actually happened on the way. So I drove to the assistant's house the night before, and it happened then.
Oh, really? Uh-huh. So it's now happened three times.
You've had a couple of issues with that caliper, haven't
you? It's time for it to go. And then I was like, a lot of times it happens once and then it doesn't happen for like a really long time. Like it happened Winter Fun Fest last year, and then never happened again until
this trip. I think Bobcat just happened. Knows when he's going snow wheeling, and he's like, I don't want to go snow wheeling. Don't make me go.
And then it happened the day before snow wheeling, and then on the way home from snow wheeling.
Gotcha.
So yeah, it's time for some new calipers up there.
So what's your plan? Are you going to do just the same calipers? Are you going to try and upgrade it to the T100 setup, or...
I think it's already on the T100.
You think
T100 on this? I'm not sure. I shouldn't say that.
It's essentially the V6 calipers of the T100 setup.
Yeah, I'm on that. So, on the V6 calipers and the vented rotors.
Okay.
Are you drumming in the back or?
I'm disc in the back.
Lucky.
Disc is nice.
Bobcat. I did buy a Tundra brake setup from Skies Off Road that I was going to throw on Samantha. But it might find its way on Bobcat. I don't know. I'm not sure what's going to happen
there.
You
got to let me know how that works.
I need...
2 weeks ago, I figured out what balloon drums were. After I took mine apart. So let me know if that goes on pretty well.
Now you know why when you contacted me and you're like, hey, you want to do a video on drum brakes? And I was kind of like, not really. Those things suck.
Yeah, it was. No. I opened up one side and I took the other side to the shop because I was like, I'm not doing it.
Right?
Drum brakes are terrible.
Yeah, they really are. So I don't know. I might just refresh and put new calipers on the front of Bobcat. And I do want to do a whole... I can't remember if I did a fluid flush on it yet or not. I might do it again, and just get the fluid out of there and then clean it up as best and put new calipers on. And then maybe that'll solve my problem of a seized caliper. But I do have
A new caliper would help a seized caliper issue.
Probably.
Yeah.
It might be brake fluid. Might be just bad brake fluid and old brake fluid in theory.
I thought you flushed the brake fluid though.
I thought so too. Last time. But so yeah, there's a, I do need to do those, the few things. I do have a list of things that I want to get done for before Cruz Moab on Bobcat too, which aren't much. I just want to fluid checks and possibly some changes. And
we'll talk about the Cruz Moab prep.
Yeah.
Okay. Another episode here.
Yeah. Let's talk to Norris.
Yeah. Norris, welcome to the podcast.
Hi. Hello.
Glad you walked in like 45 minutes ago and sat here.
I was like, yeah, I want to hang out with you guys today. Why not?
Now you're second guessing yourself?
No, I'm glad I did.
Oh, okay.
I did.
So what did you do this weekend? Because you had some fun.
Well, so in the winter, it's kind of a mix of snowboarding and a little bit of wheeling for me. And since mm-hmm. I prefer snowboarding a lot more, I don't wheel too much in the winter.
Okay.
Plus with all the holidays and stuff. Sometimes it's just, I don't even touch the truck. But a buddy of mine, Tony, in Oakland, he runs the Town 4x4 store, was like, hey, man, we should do something to kind of kick off snow melting and wheeling camping season to come back.
Oh, yeah.
So there's a spot in
right in the middle of two snowstorms coming in.
Yeah, we planned perfectly. Actually, it was 75 degrees we were at in the morning.
Ooh,
yeah, nice. But then at night it was 32.
Okay.
So there's this little area in Mendocino that him and his buddy Gil frequent all the time, because it's this kind of like creek that's been dry for so many years that you could literally stick 400 rigs on the creek.
Wow. Jeez.
Yeah, I'm not over exaggerating. We only had maybe like 40 people, but we kind of wanted to, and you know, just to be kind of conscious of some of the rules, we don't like bringing too big of groups up to tiny trails or anything where it's just going to cause a problem.
Cool.
So this was the one place that the road in is wide. You can literally make it to this spot with like a Civic. It just can't get on the creek, but it can get to like 20 feet of it.
Okay.
So we were kind of just, you know, like kind of throwing random ideas out there. And then all of a sudden he's like, hey, my friend will bring his DJ setup. And I was like, hey, I have DJ friends too. Maybe I'll ask him. So it was one of those trips that like, cause I live off my Google calendar. So I just have to look at everything every day. Cause I'll double book or I won't make it or anything like that. But by the time it got there, I didn't really have too much of an expectation. So we kind of linked up with some of the locals. So some of the Pure 4x4 guys came, some of the East Bay guys came, whoever could really make the last minute invitation, because that's how we've always done it. Last minute it, and whoever can come. Mm-hmm. But we ended up having a pretty good showing, like 40 rigs. But by the time we got there, there was literally like a giant stage with two giant PAs running off of a generator.
Yeah.
And Gil 510 on Instagram, he actually brought out his whole DJ setup and light show.
Whoa. Jeez.
Yeah. So, so it was pretty nuts. We didn't expect it, but like it was almost like a festival, because everybody kind of had their own little camps in the area, but then you'd walk to where the loud music was and it was just like a light show, a giant fire pit, way too much alcohol. You know, it was a really good time. And then during the day, if you weren't recovering, people went out to go fish, or they went to go hiking, or they went and did some of the trails.
Cool.
Mm-hmm. So this spot is actually up in Indian Valley.
Mm-hmm.
If anybody wants to know where it's at, I probably won't tell them till they ask me. But it's a really cool spot to like hold an outdoor event that requires you to bring, you know, a couple people over time, because there's places to wheel. You can kind of go up to Clear Lake and come back. There's all kinds of different things you can do up there.
But nice.
It was a good time. It was a really good time.
Cool. Did you see any fun rigs or any builds that made you recontemplate how you did yours?
Tacoma wise, not really.
No,
but
they're all the same.
Yeah, we're all cookie cutter.
Yeah,
but Nan, you guys know Nan.
Yeah,
Nan was 4x4.
Did he bring out his?
He brought his first gen.
Nice. Awesome.
Everything works on it now. I took a couple pictures of it. And that thing was really, really cool to look at.
Yeah.
Especially because when he first got it, I actually helped him like shave up all the IFS stuff so he can,
nice. And
our friend Lauren can put on the SAS stuff. So it's nice to see it rolling. It's nice to see it just move in and, you know,
he's been working on that for a year and a half, a year.
A while.
Probably. Yeah. So he did a lot of like the body work in the beginning and then he collected parts slowly for the SAS and now it's on Leafs and a SAS in the front. And
nice.
It looks like it drives great.
Yeah. What size tires?
37s. 37 cool. Geolanders, the MTs.
Okay.
They're a pretty popular tire right now.
Those are the Yokohamas, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
So I think this was one of the, you know, he's gone to a couple trips, but this is the first one where you kind of got to break it in on a couple trails. So we should bring him to the Rubicon too, because I'm going to need as much.
Yeah.
And I'm going to need all you guys to be. But no, that was a cool looking rig. There was a couple cool looking Jeeps, but oh, a San Francisco taxi cab made it to the creek bed.
Was it built or was it an actual like taxi cab?
No, it's the San Francisco, like it's a white Toyota Sienna with a green top and it says taxi. So I guess one of the guys told his buddy that, hey, you know, you can make it here in your Sienna.
Yeah.
And he brought his taxi out from San Francisco.
That's hilarious.
Wow. Yeah, he brought it out and like he opened up the taxi. His sleeping bag was like right there on the taxi. His little, like, you know, the back was where his kitchen was, but
those Siennas are like a perfect overlanding rig. If you're not, if you don't need like a super 4x4 thing, they got tons of space.
They come all wheel drive.
Yeah. Oh, they do come all wheel drive.
Some are.
Nice. Some come all wheel drive. And a company, I think it's one of the same companies that are doing Subaru lifts make, and I talked about this on the last time, but they make Sienna lifts.
So you can, that's awesome.
There's a couple of lifted Siennas on Instagram.
Yeah,
that's
Norris
cool.
And I keep sending pictures back and forth of Siennas.
Yeah. You need to find a way to gear one of those down.
Oh, I'm sure.
So other than just the differentials,
we can fit like some VW portal boxes on there, like the old school VW buses.
Mm-hmm. Buses had portal boxes.
Yeah. Well, they had gear reduction boxes, which are they were small, like little portal boxes for the most part.
Interesting.
Yeah,
that'd be cool. Yeah, if we can take some of those and put them on, I'd be down.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's do it.
Screw the Bronco. Let's do one of those.
Yeah. No, definitely.
You can probably find a Sienna somewhere pretty cheap.
Huh? Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure. I like the old ones, though, like the late 80s.
Right.
The bubble ones?
No, the like pointed nose ones.
And then you can make all your money using it as an Uber.
Right? True. I don't think you can. Don't you have to have a new enough rig for Uber? Yeah, I think that would be too old.
Yeah, you're probably.
But those 80s ones had 4 bucket seats and then a bench in the as the like the back row. So it had the front 2 seats.
Are you talking about the Delica?
No, the old school Siennas.
Oh, the Previas.
Previas. Thank you. Previas. Sorry,
I know my vans.
Yeah, apparently better than me. Yeah, the Previa had the captain's chairs in the front and then 2 captain chairs, 2 bucket seats in the back. And the front ones could turn 180 degrees.
Okay.
So you could sit and have like a conversation and face each other or drive backwards one or the other.
Yeah. I actually think they brought that back. So the new Siennas, if I remember right, it could be a different car, but there's 3 rows. There's the back bench and then there's like the weird either 2 seats or other bench in the middle. But those middle seats flip around like a captain chair and then they slide back on the rails and then a table comes up in the middle.
Nice.
Yeah, I forgot what commercial I saw this from, but there's a van out there that has a table in the middle and you can flip the seats.
Way to go, Toyota. Winning in the van world.
Yeah. They just need to bring the vacuum back now.
Right?
The built-in vacuums.
Yeah.
It's funny, but I don't know if this may be a millennial or Gen Z thing, but there's actually a small like cult following of Toyota Siennas like on social media where they're just using them for everything and making funny videos. So
yeah, I think that's a generational thing because I believe that most people enjoy the vehicles that they grew up in.
Right.
Right. And so it's like, I still have the urge to get an early 90s Toyota Camry, which is like super tiny little car because that's what my mom drove us around in when we were kids, you know, and I think it'd be fun to have that as like a daily commuter, you know, and it just brings, I think there's something there that brings everybody back to like, what did your parents have? That'd be fun to own, you know, cause I know that like my parents loved having, you know, the vehicle or liked the generation of the vehicles that their parents had, you know, and I think it kind of trickles down that way.
It's really nostalgic. Cause I grew up in a brand new third gen 4Runner, a Toyota Previa and a Isuzu Rodeo that my dad built. And I mean, now it's like, you know, there's like a lot of fancy cars, Teslas and stuff like that. But if somebody said, hey, man, there's a mint Toyota Previa for $7,000 mint, like I'd more excited to buy that than to buy anything else. Just because, you know, it's like, man, you know, this reminds me of when I was a kid and I had no issues, no problems, not being an adult, really. So I think, you know, a lot of people buy it for nostalgia.
Absolutely. Yeah. The assistant's mom had an Austin Healey Sprite. And one of those came on Facebook Marketplace the other day. And it was like just the body torn apart, you know, one of those, like we have all the parts, air quotes, you know, and it was $1,000 and I showed it to her and I was like, Austin
you put
Healey?
This on Samantha,
you know, and you know, and she was like, that would be a lot of work. I'm like, yeah, but we could do it together and we could build it the way that you would want it, you know? She's like, no, you have too many vehicles. Like, but it, you know,
but it's $1,000. Well,
but she's like, I do like the idea of possibly getting one at some point in time, but I don't want that one.
Right.
I'm like, you want the finished one.
Yeah.
Right.
Boring. Yeah. So are we going to get you through the Rubicon this year then?
Set a date.
Okay.
Yeah. I need it on my Google calendar.
Yeah. I got to put it on my Google calendar. Let me take off a lot of the, oh, well, no, I just have to take off my rooftop tent. That's basically the
what if we set up a DJ down at the Springs? Would that get you in there?
I would just go for you guys. No, I'd take off a couple of the stuff I wouldn't need on the truck and roll out and buy some extra parts and go.
Yeah. Nice. Okay. Cool. We're going to make it happen.
Yeah,
we
got to
get him out there, Nan. We got to get Jesse Stovetop.
Weld's Taco.
Needs to go out there this year. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What about Valley Taco?
He's done it.
Oh, he's done it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, Benny did it.
I'm skipping Soup Bowl, though. I don't think that's part of the trail, but.
Got it.
I'm skipping it.
Yeah, well, it's an optional line.
Right, for sure.
I was going to ask you if you wanted to talk about base camp. It's coming up in the future, it's a little ways out. But I figured we could start kind of promoting it or talk about it coming and what you guys do there. And you could use this as an avenue to help get sponsors if you need it or whatever.
Right. So
like Phil, AA sponsors?
What's up?
What, like AA sponsors?
Maybe. Okay. I mean, we could use those too. So Basecamp is actually ran by a Sacramento group. Well, they have a couple of chapters in different cities, but... a group called Pure 4x4. So my neighbor in Thomas, Phil, we actually met last year. And that's a big group of guys that built their rigs pretty quickly and have been getting into the scene. So when COVID happened, the first base camp took place where they did it at the Sierra Valley base camp up north. And it was just basically just a place that, you know, people could go camp safely, kind of have some events, have some raffles, you know, just to kind of have an event because nothing was going on for so long. Mm-hmm. People were itching just to kind of go out and, you know, and do things. But basically last year it's kind of like your own adventure. So base camp, the ranch, there's a big barn in there, there's bathrooms, but, you know, it's a huge property. Everybody kind of parks in a spot and then, you know, they provide food, they provide music and games, but you can go on, mountain bike trail, so you can go fishing in the nearby lake. It's close to Poker Flats. There's ATVs provided if people want to go rent ATVs out. And I think they're adding more events this year.
Wow.
So if I can, let me bring it up on my phone. Because the dates are, I believe, in May. May 5th through the 7th, I believe, is the dates. I might have to check that. But it's coming up quickly.
We put Brian on it.
Yeah. Registration, May 5th through the 9th. Registration just opened up for early bird special. I think it's $30 for a day or $60 for 2 days, but that gets you entrance into the base camp itself and access to all the activities. And there is a crap ton of sponsors already part of it that are doing raffles for the event. So there's a lot of big names on there. I can't name them all. I think the flyer just came out yesterday, so I'd be lying if I even try to name a couple. But
what's the proceeds from the raffle going to?
So I think it's just to cover the proceeds for the raffle is just for a bunch. There's a bunch of free items, and I think it just goes to renting the ranch for for the day or for the 2 days for the weekend because they are providing a couple things, you know, with the entrance fee to get in there. So
cool.
Phil would be pretty cool to bring on the show too because he can kind of talk about it and he's local. So
okay,
yeah.
So I'm curious about Pure 4x4. Is that essentially a group kind of like Hella Trails or what is?
So Pure VIP has been around for a long time, and those were the like what you want to call it. I've been out of the JDM game for a long time, but they're like the luxury big body sedans that are really popular in Japan.
Okay.
You know, they're usually like slammed to the ground and stuff, but with anything else, a lot of the people or fans or enthusiasts in that area are growing up now.
Okay.
So, you know, it's not as, you know, those cars aren't as suitable for families and kids and stuff anymore. You can't really get out anywhere. They're show cars. So a lot of the guys are transitioning into the off-road world, and they started building it and they kind of, you know, had their own section for the group for the 4x4 side.
Okay.
I don't know if it's exactly like Ella Trails is, because we're not even really a thing. We're kind of just like, hey man, we just like to go have fun and you know, good vibes. You know, there's no, you know, we're,
but like out, Overland Bound.
No, there's no memberships.
Pure there's no member. Yeah. It's not like a big organ, like an actual organization.
Pure is an org. I think there is certain steps to be part of the group itself.
Okay.
But it's not like, there's not like member numbers or like, you know, they don't have like a forum or anything like that.
Okay.
Hardland Line Co.
I mean, see, I don't even like, I've wheeled with those guys a couple times too. And I don't get that. Well, I guess I just never ask what people are about anyway. I'm like, oh, cool. You're out here. We're all having fun.
I think they're more like Hella Trails.
Yeah, yeah.
I think they do have like a shop that does a lot of work that's under some sort of the same name, or, you know, because they have the Hardline Land Co. people post photos of the rigs that are being built.
Right, right, right.
So they have something.
I don't think they have a specific shop yet. I know some of their shops that they use for cars are starting to do a little bit 4x4 stuff. So I know like, I know they're doing a lot of their work with Dimitri up in Stellarbilt, so mm-hmm. he's getting a lot of their work. But their group is pretty big. I think they have a chapter in LA and Vegas, so they're quickly sweeping the overland world. Because for the most part, like a lot of us suck at marketing, and Phil and those guys are really good at marketing. So you know,
I don't know. I feel like a lot of overlanders are pretty good at marketing. Mm-hmm.
But no, but they're like really good at it. Okay. Like they have like plans and stuff, and we just like throw random stuff out on Instagram. But they're pretty good at planning stuff. They're holding events. Mm-hmm. Like for Hella Trails, the only event we ever held was the toy drive.
Yeah.
For the most part, is because a lot of us are lazy and we kind of just want to do one thing. But we you know, once COVID fully clears everybody, we're gonna run that toy drive again, because that's what we really like to do.
Yeah.
Is that one single day toy drive. So
that was fun. That was a good time.
Yeah,
but cool. Yeah, the base camp is happening in a couple months. Is
Pit Phil part of Pier?
Yes, Phil. Yeah, okay. Phil's like I don't know if he's the main guy, but I think he's the main guy. Got it. Okay. Yeah. So Phil runs.
Is he the one Pier in the black
black third
gen?
Yeah, yeah, the really nice looking black.
He was out at the meetup. The Tacoma meetup.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. So those guys were there. What did I do that day? Because you texted me.
Yeah, you were down in Midtown, you said.
Oh yeah,
I was like, you coming out? And he's like, I don't think so. Are there a lot of rigs? I'm like, yeah, there's a lot of rigs. He's like,
I think I was already drinking. I was already drinking in Midtown before, and I was like, I don't know if I can make it all the way.
It was like 11.
Yeah. You got to start early.
You can't drink all day if you don't start in the morning.
Exactly. Well, I don't get to be home often, like, because I'm traveling so much for work, or like I'm always on these trips. And so the time I do get to spend in Sacramento, I'm like, I'm going downtown. I'm going to Midtown. I'm grabbing a beer.
Sure. Nice. Definitely. Cool. Maybe spread the word to Phil, and we can see if we can, or introduce us, and we can see if we can get him on to talk about the event a little bit more. Maybe we'll get both you guys here and have a little fun.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And I was curious if you've heard of the Instagram Toyota_Rocklander.
Toyota Rocklander. No.
No?
They've been reposting both of our stuff.
Have they been doing yours as well? Yeah, uh-huh. They've been. Do you know who he is?
Huh.
Oh.
Toyota Rocklanders.
Rocklanders.
Who is it?
I'll have to tell you off air. Okay. But I figured it. He. I messaged him because his the picture is Benny of Valley Taco. Yeah,
it's Benny, Rick.
I said, hey, is this Benny? Are you starting a new Instagram? And he's like, nope, not Benny. I'll give you one more guess. And I said, okay, how about a hint? And then the hint was, are you part of the Hardline Land Co. or Hella Trails?
Okay.
And he said, well, I think I'm sort of part of the Hardland Land Co. if you're going with those two.
Okay.
And then I got it in the next guess.
Wow.
If it's squeaky, he owes me a beer.
It's not squeaky.
Oh, it's not squeaky.
Uh-huh. Mm. But I'll give you a beer. Anyways.
Is it Weld?
I don't know if I have a bell or anything for
ding,
that.
Ding, 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 ding.
Yeah. I need a bell. Ding, 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 ding.
Yeah.
We're like two kids in a candy store.
Yes, it's Welds.
Well, nice. No,
I'm working on a logo for it. So.
No, that's awesome.
That's awesome, man. I feel like there's a lot of guys in the San Diego area that are... I know the Dirtbag Garage guys are down there.
Yeah.
But I haven't, you know, like for the people we know, I haven't seen them. Like Welds isn't kind of... I don't know if he's... Like he has his own group now, but I'm glad that he's starting that, so...
Cool. Actually, that's kind of funny that you brought that up, because I just got asked to do a custom for tailgate plan for Dirtbag Garage.
Nice.
And I thought that was funny because there's the Dirt Garage on YouTube, mm-hmm. and then we know Dirtbag Johnny who runs Dirtbag mm-hmm. Clothing, and I'm like, man, he's got like covering all this, mm-hmm. combining everything. And when I was interviewing Nate, when Nate was hanging out at King of the Hammers with us, he was like that his followers are started a the dirt bag like club or something like
that.
Oh,
that's right.
You know, so there's a whole like there's a bunch of dirt bags out there.
I don't think I've added a new page in a while because there's so many Toyota pages now mm-hmm. that I'm like, I don't know who's who. I don't know like what's going on, but there's
how
so
many do you
Toyota
have?
Pages. I probably follow only 10.
No, how many pages have you started?
Me?
Yeah.
That's a top secret information. Very top secret.
Like I have 4 on my Instagram. Mm-hmm.
Does my dog's account count?
Yes. Well, yeah. I would count it because uh-huh. mine is my graphic design business, my personal page, Snail Armor, and Snail Trail 4x4. Those are my 4.
Okay. Okay.
I have 5, but I can't say what they are.
3 are caps.
Yeah. One's for my OnlyFans.
Yeah. Are you running Milo's?
Maybe.
Yeah.
No, I'm not actually. I'm actually not running. Like, I'm only running 1 now on my phone because I have my social media manager now, who's doing a phenomenal job, by the way. If anybody talks to Morflight on Instagram, it is not me anymore, by the way.
Is so it? No. Okay.
It's now my wife. So she does a great job, by the way.
Yeah.
So she's way more responsive than I am and friendly. So that's a good times, man.
Yeah.
Good times. Yeah. So
good snow wheeling, good adventure. Mm-hmm. Hey, I'm putting you on the spot. I think we're coming to the close. So mm-hmm. instead of last words, can you give us a Norris tip?
A Norris tip. Norris overlanding tip.
I like Norris tip better.
Norris's tip.
Norris's tip.
Oh Norris's tip.
Oh my God. What kind of Norris tips could I... does it have to be truck related?
I don't know. No.
I'm going to have to think about this and hit pause and hit record after I think about it. I don't know if I can think of anything on top of my head right now.
Oh.
No, I'm serious. I'm going to have to think about it. I have to have a good one for you guys.
I'm sure I remember the one that you were popping them off when we were at the undisclosed location.
Was I drinking?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, then yeah.
But,
that's all right.
But you're like, carry a little squirt bottle of water and Dawn so you can clean up your like area and it works great on your snail armor. You know, and it's like, I forget you had something about lug nuts and you're like, all this stuff. It was funny.
I'll do a Norris trip. If you go on a rager like we did, just throw a bunch of waters in your tent. Because when you wake up and you're dehydrated, mm-hmm. it could save your life.
Yes. Okay. That is a good one.
But I did get an IV this weekend.
Oh,
yeah. Geez. So it saved my life twice. So I had like Austin, he's a PNW overlander. Uh-huh. He's a paramedic. And he gave me an IV and it was great.
That's cool.
I was ready to rage again.
I've had five minutes. I've done that scenario in Vegas. Yeah. That's good.
Carry IVs. Add that to your IVs
and some
I was going to one up you.
Go ahead.
My one upper, right? Waters in the tent, big one. But take Pedialyte or Drip Drops, which are a version of Pedialyte, and add those because then you get a lot of the benefit back.
Or the liquid IVs.
Liquid IVs or liquid IVs if you can handle it.
You know what's funny is the electrolyte thing is so big now. They have a drink in certain liquor stores called Electrolit because people were drinking so much Pedialyte for recovery that a company capitalized on it. And it's called Electrolit and it's for adults and it's for recovery.
That's funny.
Nice.
Yeah. Cool. Well, good awesome. One.
Does that do it then? Are we not having final words since we did Norris's tip?
We can, sure, whatever.
Every time I think of tips, I should just send it in a voicemail to you guys.
Yes. We'll start a Norris's tip section.
Perfect.
Yeah.
I will compile them today.
Perfect. Awesome. We're going to get a bunch of voicemails later.
40 voicemails.
And with that, my friends, keep crawling. We'll be right back.
I got one for you.
Okay.
You ready?
I'm ready.
This is a good one.
Okay.
All right. What happens when Kermit the Frog's car breaks down?
What happens?
It gets towed.
It gets towed because he's a frog and it becomes a toad?
Yep.
Okay.
Or it gets towed.
Okay. Gotcha.
Not that good?
No. Oh. Not a fan.
Yeah. Why did the snail paint a big S on its car's hood?
I don't know.
Because it looks like S cargo.
Okay.